America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Here's what Monty Poole, NBC Sports Bay Area, told us yesterday.
And I also think that they will make a trade on the approach to the trade deadline. This is a team built to make a trade. When you got 13 guys who are able to play at this level, there will come a point in time when you say, okay, I can give up three to get one guy that I know can be a secondary star. And I think that's going to happen.
Okay, and I agree with him, and you agree with him. And then you say, for you, it's more likely to be Wiggins. Well, for me, it's more likely to be who Steph Curry and Draymond Green don't want to play with anymore. And right now, I would argue, and again, this is just one game, Andrew has come off these two seasons where he kind of was missing in action, but these two players, they've got muscle memory of Andrew Wiggins being a key piece to a championship. And Jonathan, I think they do look at as somebody who has really improved and could be really good, but do they really trust him? Do they really trust him to be doing the right things on the basketball court when you get to a playoff run? That's what he's trying to earn, that trust, over the next 4 or 5 months. And I don't know that he will. And again, in a very small sample, he's off to a poor start on that end.
Tiny sample. I don't even know if it's fair to...
No, it's 20 minutes of basketball.
Right. And normally you talk about 20 games as a good sample, a fourth of the year, before you can really make sweeping statements. And I know he's played 240 whatever games in his career. So we can look at that and we can see improvement and we can see that he's not where many people want him to be. I just am fascinated by the idea of a trade for a big boy, and I know it's too early to really think about who that target would be, but just scanning the list of players based on their salary and guys who might be available, a guy like Jimmy Butler, for example, doesn't seem thrilled. That situation is not necessarily a great one. He's making $48 million, 48.8. So you'd need to come up with about $44 million in player in order to get Jimmy Butler. And there's other names on this list. Trey Young and Zach LaVine always pops up, and he's making 43. And
no thanks.
Exactly. But if you're looking for a player in the $40 million range, you're going to have to part with about $36 million at least to make it work. So that's where, for me, the whole idea of a trade becomes really, really complicated if you want to keep Wiggins.
Totally get it, but I also don't know. I don't know that the player they're going to be want is making XYZ dollars.
True.
Like, you know, is it a younger player? Is it a more established player? I don't know. Let's go Grandpa Daddy and Hayward. GPD, what are you doing?
Oh, man. I'm trying to get all these girls into the car. My wife, the two kids. It's my daughter's birthday. We're just going to go to Grandma and Grandpa's house and sing her happy birthday and give her a cake and a balloon. And
love it.
We already had a birthday party for her.
Okay. So, thank goodness you threw some new sentences on the end. When you started the call and you're like, yeah, I'm just trying to get all these girls into the car, it didn't have the greatest sound to all of our listeners, GPD.
Listen, I want to say about this. You guys are really spot on, And Kuminga, the whole, I watched the game, and I'm going to tell you, there was an earlier caller that said, Kuminga, it looks like he's good, he's got skills, but he looks like a high school player who's just balling out of control. And you're right. He doesn't have the basketball IQ. He can develop it, but he should have developed it by now, right? It's been 3 years. If he was hungry, and here's the thing, is he hungry? He's not that hungry because he would have been in the lab studying, and he would have had the basketball IQ. We don't see that out of him. Sure, he got hops. He can take it to the rack. He can go to the line. He can do all that. But he doesn't have the basketball IQ. And being under Steph, Draymond, and all that crew, he should be having that IQ, even Steve Kerr. Now, point number one. Point number two, Steve Kerr was in the Olympics. He had all this talent. He had to play 12 people. How many people did he play during the Olympics at one time?
About a 10-man rotation.
Everybody but Jason Tatum.
And Halliburton didn't play at all.
Yeah, him too.
Okay, so stop right there. So he had a look at what it's like to play a bunch of talent at one time. He did it last night. And he says, like, wow, it worked. But what he's going to do, I'm telling you, Kerr, he's a genius, man. People don't give him enough credit. And now that people are saying you don't play the young guys, and he's playing the young guys. So you know what he's doing? He's going to play all the people, and he's going to play it all and see the cream that comes to the top, baby. And then that's when he's going to get his 10-man, 11-man max rotation. Kerr's a G, bro. I love that guy, man. He's a mastermind in basketball. Don't underestimate him. And they're looking good, bro. TJD, man, I love the development that he did. That kid is coming along, that youngster. Man, they got depth. And look, one more thing. Package Kuminga and maybe one other guy. They got so much depth now, they can package Kuminga and somebody else and get a superstar. And then they can make a run at the deadline.
I mean, that's what they're at least, GPT, thank you. They're at least preparing or readying themselves for that possibility. Let's hear what Steve Kerr did say yesterday about the 12-man rotation and when he decided to do that.
Yesterday, honestly. I didn't, 2 days ago I was thinking, well, maybe I'll just play 10 and I'll just have to tell two of these guys that they're going to sit, and I couldn't justify that because they've all played really well in camp. And I even felt bad sitting Lindy. Lindy's had a great camp. He's one of our highest plus minus guys in camp for all the preseason games. So this is as deep a team as I've ever coached, and we've got to lean into that, and we're going to play a lot of people.
Okay. I mean, I'll take it at face value to a degree. I don't buy that's sustainable or the plan going forward, or that Steve Kerr really wanted to do one thing, but then his heartstrings made him do something else. He was playing Portland.
Thank you.
He knew damn well he was going to win that basketball game no matter who he played. And then they can start to feel it out, see if any injuries happen, what have you. They've already announced three players as questionable for tomorrow night. And two of their names are Steph and Draymond. They're questionable.
Questionable.
So is Melton. They're all questionable. They're all sore coming out of last night. And don't be surprised. Do not be surprised if one or two of those guys is not playing tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if Steph and Draymond both sat, but yeah. You look at Utah's win total, the preseason over-under is 27.5. So you start out with the Blazers, which is 21.5, cupcake, and then you move on to soft serve ice cream in Utah. So yeah, I could see maybe you need some load management in game 2 of 82. Go ahead and rest those guys. What are we doing?
888-957-9570. We'll get back to the call shortly, but we loved our time earlier today with the Hall of Famer, Kurt Warner talking out all things Brock Purdy, Kyle Shanahan, and the matchup that's ahead. Wait till you hear what he says about the Cowboys. If you missed the conversation at all, here it is. We started it out, as we always do, by thanking him for his appearance and checking in on how he's doing.
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. I really wonder if you see, do you see anything different this year with Brock Purdy's performances versus what we've seen in the first 2 years?
I would say not a lot different. You know, and I think the hard part is you always got to kind of look at each game individually. I still think Brock has been playing, you know, really good football this year. You know, it hasn't been quite as easy in the past. I felt like this Chiefs game was maybe the worst game that I've seen him play in his career. You know, and again, I don't want to make a huge statement just on the last game, but he's played so well and been so consistent at making the plays that are in front of him and creating some opportunities within this offense. But I thought he really struggled in this game against the Chiefs, just kind of seeing it, you know, recognizing what they were doing, you know, protecting the football, just some different things. Didn't think he played his best game, but you know, overall on the season, maybe not quite as good as the last couple years, but again, let's put it in context, right? I mean, the way he's been performing over the last couple of years is as good as we've seen anybody perform on a consistent level. And so this year may be a little bit of a down tick from that. You know, and really you just have to look at the whole team. I think the team isn't playing nearly as consistently well this year as they have in the past.
And part of that is no McCaffrey all year, and now Ayuk is gone with the terrible knee injury as well. I wonder, Kurt, if when you watch the Niners, if you aren't seeing defenses come up with a plan against not only Brock Purdy but Shanahan with playing press man and putting a lot more pressure on this offense.
Yeah, I mean, again, it starts with running the football with this offense, as we know. And, you know, they've done that really well at times and not quite as good at other times. But yeah, as I've said, it just hasn't been quite as easy. They haven't had as many, you know, short throws, go for big plays. They haven't had as many big play touchdowns, which to me always makes offense harder. You know, when you have to play 10 and 12 plays without making a mistake, without missing a throw, without having a holding penalty, that's much different than when you make big chunk plays all the time. And what we've seen from this 49ers team and really Brock Purdy over the last couple of years is he's made a lot of big plays every game. And this team and this offense clicks when they make big plays and they can shorten the field, you know, in terms of, you know, plays that they have to make. When you have to go the long distance, most offenses in this league struggle to be able to do that and then put 7 points on the board at the end. And so I don't know if you can pin it on any one thing. But that to me is something that's really stood out, is that they just haven't been getting as many of those chunk plays and big plays. You know, Brandon Ayuk hasn't had many of those. Like, I can't think of very many when Debo's caught the short little quick screen and gone for big plays. You know, even the run game's been good, but we haven't seen as many of those breakout big runs that we were accustomed to a year ago from Christian McCaffrey. So I think that's helped, you know, That's, you know, caused a little bit of the stoppage of the offense, is that they have to be more methodical and more detail-oriented, and everybody's got to play, you know, a little bit more on their P's and Q's to make the plays when there is tighter coverage or when those big plays aren't there and when they have to play 10 and 12 plays to put points on the board, and they just haven't been as efficient this year.
Kurt Warner with us on Willard and Dibs. Kurt, I've been dying to ask you this because you get it. In the age of social media, if you want to be a $60 million quarterback, then there are never any excuses. And if your team has injuries, you still need to be amazing. So I wanted to ask you this. If you went into a football game and there was no Marshall Faulk and there was no Isaac Bruce and there was no Torrey Holt, how do you think it would affect your performance?
I mean, I'd probably come down with some kind of arm injury or something. you know, I mean, it's always going to affect your performance. And again, a lot of it really depends on, you know, I always looked at it like, if a team was going to play me in zone coverage, then I didn't care who was out there. You know, if they were playing zone coverage, then it would fall on me to make the right decision, throw it to the guy, and of course, they got to make the plays on the other end. But it's being in the right place when you're supposed to be there. And I think there's a lot of guys that you can get to do that. And so you feel like you can still play at a high level when that's the case. If a team's going to come out against you and challenge you physically, in terms of like play man to man, and can your guys separate, then to me it would fall to two things. A, can my guys win in those situations? It's probably going to be a little bit more of a struggle than it is with Isaac and Torrey and Marshall and Larry Fitzgerald and those guys. But then you have to create more for those guys. You've got to get into some stacks and bunches and put them in situations where they're not going to get pressed. And, you can create some more space for them instead of expecting them to play, the same way your other guys would play. And so I always felt like we would be successful, but how we had to be successful may have to change from a schematic standpoint, just to play and cater to what our guys are good at or what they're not good at, or what we're going to be facing that week versus when you have those guys, you don't really care. Like, you play us however you want. We're going to win against man. We're going to win against zone. We're going to play our scheme because it doesn't really matter. Well, when you have lesser players, so to speak, now you have to be a little bit more creative in how you get them open or what you do or how you force a defense to play against you than you may have to with all that talent.
That's an interesting way to break it down, because we're starting to see defenses come up and pressure this team a little bit more with, like you were talking about, with man-to-man coverage. And I wonder how much the new movement of defenses toward the two-deep zone makes it tougher on offenses, because it seems like the big plays in the passing game are harder to come by now.
That's a myth. I don't buy into it. Here's the thing that is funny about that, is that you say that, okay, the bigger plays are harder to come by because there's two deep safeties. Well, when you think about it, the base coverages you're going to see are two deep, three deep, or four deep, right? And so why would it be harder to get big plays down the field against two guys covering the entire back end of the field versus three or versus four? So that to me is a myth. It's more what I would say is the chunk throws might be a little bit harder. And by that, I mean kind of the 15 to 25 yard throws are a little harder, not the big plays down the field. And why that's harder is because you have five guys playing zone underneath in cover two. And so the windows are smaller, in that second level, or you're always going to be throwing it over a guy in the second level because of the underneath defenders, not because of the deep defenders. If you can protect, there's only two guys on the back end of the field. Like, I can exploit that all day long if you give me the time. And so that's, I think, the myth that's going on out there. But yeah, you have to be a little more precise on those chunk second level throws when you're playing against cover two, because you're going to have to throw it over a guy. You're going to have to layer it. The windows are going to be a little bit tighter, when that's the case. But that to me is the biggest thing about it. More so than you can't get the big plays down the field, it's, the consistency of the chunk plays there. You better be really good. Like when I played back with Rams, we saw cover two all the time. We saw teams that wanted to jam our guys at the line of scrimmage. That's another thing that can factor in, right? You've got corners that are up at the line of scrimmage that can jam your receivers to slow them down the field. So you got to be a little more creative in getting your guys. But we saw a whole bunch of cover two, and we were good at getting big plays, but I think it's because we were so detail-oriented, and I had the capacity to kind of layer throws over the top and could be accurate with that second-level throw. And that's probably the biggest difference is, there may not be the precision at the quarterback spot that we've seen in the past. And so without that precision, those chunk throws are going to be harder to come by, not the deep throws. So just to kind of clear that up, that, hey, it's harder to get big plays, against cover two, I don't agree with that. But it might be harder to get, those second-level 25-yard throws on a consistent basis because of the precision of quarterbacks and offenses right now.
Kurt, I have a reason, a specific reason for asking this, which I'll reveal in a moment. But as a quarterback, if you could have basically a great teammate at a specific position to help you do what you do, what would that position be? Or if you want to put it on the other side of the ball on defense, you could do that too.
So again, what position would I want to have, or what kind of player would I want to have to make my job easier?
Exactly. Like where would you want like a great teammate or great teammates at what other position to make your job go well?
You know, I mean, first of all, like I was fortunate to play with Marshall Faulk. And so I think a good versatile running back, you know, can be a real mismatch and can really help you dictate things if they can get out of the backfield and catch the ball, kind of like Christian does, right? He's kind of a positionless player that you can put a lot of different places. And I think those guys are so, you know, good and important. You know, a Deebo Samuel would be another type guy that you would love to have. I still think the biggest mismatches in football are the tight ends. If you have a really, really good tight end, they're really tough to match up with. If they can play, you know, play in the run game like George can, play in the pass game, get down the field, make big plays, because they're being covered by those interior guys that have to worry so much about the run game and so much about coming downhill. And so if you have a good player there, I think that's, you know, those are kind of two areas where you can create really, really good mismatches for yourself. Unlike outside, of course, I played with great receivers and I'm not trading them for anybody, but you know, the best defensive athletes are going to be out there too. So the discrepancy in, you know, ability is going to be smaller in those areas than I think it is a linebacker covering a really good, you know, receiving back, or a linebacker or a safety covering a really good receiving tight end, where those guys can be involved in more parts of the game. I think those would be the areas that I would definitely look to.
Okay, so here's why I'm asking, because you kind of got to receiver there at the end. And as a quarterback, I think that's kind of where our brains go. But, Kurt, I'm amazed at what's happening at this position around the league and the way that it's being paid. A lot of teams, it's their second highest paid player behind the quarterback. Hell, sometimes it's the second and the third highest paid guy, kind of like the Miami Dolphins. Does this make sense to you, the amount of resources that are being put toward wide receivers?
You know, that's a tough one, because it is a throw first league, or it has been really until this year. You know, I've seen that kind of trend change a little bit. And so you have to have a difference maker at that position, right? Like, you know, there's very few really good teams without a difference maker at that position. And if they don't have the difference maker at that position, then you better be really good in other areas. So I understand why those guys are getting paid, and especially the top guys in the league are getting paid, you know, because of the nature of the way it's going. And then I think you look at other spots. Like, you know, I think resources need to go to the offensive line. You know, I think the teams that are really good in this league, that's another thing you start to see, is offensive line becomes so important to those really good teams. And building there, I think, you know, that's vital. But I understand why at the wide receiver spot. Because, again, you can look around the league at teams that you know, I think about the Dallas Cowboys. You know, they got CeeDee Lamb, who's a really good wide receiver. They don't have much outside of that. So they're not running the football very well, and so it becomes a premium to have multiple guys on the outside that can be really good, that can win for you, that can be game changers for you. If you're really good in the other areas up front, then maybe that's not the case. But I just think, because of the rules and the way it's all dictated, wide receiver is an important position. You know, you got to have them for most teams, kind of like the quarterback. So I understand the resources. You know, I just think the problem is, and even at the quarterback position, is that we've gotten to the point where all we do is, you know, we just slate guys in. Oh, he's the next guy up. We're going to pay him this exorbitant amount of money. And the difference is, you need to pay guys that are worth that kind of money. And we need to somehow get away from having to pay everybody that kind of money, because that to me is, I think, where the discrepancy is. And I look at it more from a quarterback lens now. But we've got all these guys making $200 million in the league that probably don't deserve to be making that. They're not good enough to be considered in that category, to hamstring an organization, to be expected to carry a team. They're not there, yet they're getting paid that. And, you know, and I think we start to do that at every position where we start to overpay good players instead of reserving that money and that commitment for great players.
It's the whole idea of resetting the market, and Dallas has a couple of guys who've done that, and I want to get your thoughts on Dak Prescott and just where you see Dallas right now coming off a bye and a team at 3-3 that feels like they've been playing worse than that. What do you make of Dak Prescott and this Dallas offense coming into Levi's on Sunday?
I don't think they're very good right now. I don't think there's anything that they do really well. You know, and that becomes a huge part of it, is that not every team can do everything. But if you want to compete in this league, you better be really good at something if that's the case. And Dallas isn't really good at anything. Dak's not playing really good right now. You know, their pass game isn't very good right now. Their run game is awful right now. You know, they're not playing great at the offensive line. Like, there is no area or no player on their team right now that I say is really good, is one of the top, you know, situations or top areas offensively in the league. And so, you know, then you put a bunch of average together and you probably get below average. And then they're having their struggles on defense without being able to stop the run and some of those things. So I see a team that's very, very average across the board. And I don't know how they get out of it. I don't know where all of a sudden this change comes from, because to me, if you don't have a dominant area on your offense, you better be really, really good at the details. Like, the little things must be the, you know, the most important thing for you, because you're not just going to out-athlete people. You're not just going to beat them because, you know, you're better than them at the offensive line. So you better be really good from a technique standpoint, a detail standpoint, a creative standpoint offensively. And I just don't see this team being that either. I look at their film and I say, man, there's so many things I would do different in the passing game, so many details that aren't, you know, buttoned up that cost them. So when you put it all together, to me, they're just not a very good football team right now, and I don't see how they work their way out of it.
Kurt Warner with us here on Willard and Dibbs. Kurt, you won't remember this, but last season you came on this show and we talked about Kyle Shanahan's system and how it's not really built to come from behind. That the whole idea is to get a lead early and then hold it. And they do that very well. But obviously, it hasn't worked as well this year. And there's a lot of talk with this fan base with regard to Kyle's inability to have the right offense in place when there's chaos or when you fall behind. Is this a flaw in the system, in your opinion?
You know, I think that's really hard to use that term. The way I always look at it, and I do remember our conversation, and I believe in that part of the conversation, I also said, here's the thing about every team, is that every team has to focus and try to become great at something. And in doing that, something else is always going to be sacrificed because of it. If you want to be a great running team and commit more time to the run game, your pass game isn't going to be as good. Or you're going to say, I'm really good in the run game. Now I'm going to be really good with play action, a.k.a., you know, the 49ers, a.k.a. the Lions. Those teams are really good at that. They're not as good in the drop back game. And I think it's because they sacrifice some because of what their system is and how their system is built and how they expect to play most of the time. It doesn't mean they neglect, you know, when they have to play drop back football. It's just not their forte. It's just not what they work on and what they, you know, what they hone in on every week. That's going to be more limited, and the other things are going to be, you know, the more important part of it or the more extensive part of what they practice and what they plan to do, because that's what they expect to be good at and that's what they expect to win with most times out. And so when you say a flaw, I mean, yeah, I don't think they're as good in those areas. You know, I'm not as big a fan of of the complexity of their pass game and how they like to run it when they're playing drop back and spread out football. I love, you know, a lot of what they do in the run game and how their play action comes off of it. And so, you know, but I think you can look at a lot of teams. You know, I was on a lot of teams that were really good at throwing the football, and we weren't great at running the football. Like, that wasn't what we were great at. We didn't think that was necessarily our strength. You know, we could suffice. We could, you know, we could run the ball at times. We could have good games running the ball, but it wasn't what we were great at. And it was, you know, because we chose based on our personnel or based on the scheme that we thought we could have success with, hey, we're going to be a 3-4 wide receiver team. That's how we're going to win. That's the strength of our team. Let's be great at that, and then let's hope we're good enough at the others that when we have to do them, you know, we can be functional and we can be good enough to win. And so I don't know if it's a flaw, because I don't know how many teams are out there that are good at everything, you know, that are great in every facet. So it's like, hey, pick your poison. What do we want to do today? What's the dictate? Oh, we got to come from behind. No problem. We're great at that. Oh, we're up, you know, we're up by 10, so we're going to have to pound the football and run it. Oh, we're great at that. Like, there's not many teams that are good like that. And so it's figuring out what your team is or what your scheme is, or building your team around your scheme and saying, this is how we're going to win most of the time. And then when we get into those two or three games where we have to do it a different way, let's hope we have the personnel. Let's hope we're good enough in that facet to get it done, maybe one, maybe two of those three times. But we know that's probably not where we're going to hang our hat, and we're going to understand that going in and hope we don't play in a majority of our games that play against our strength.
I think that's a phenomenal answer. Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Kurt, it's always great to have you. Thank you so, so much.
You got it. Good to talk to you guys.
There is Kurt Warner right here on Weirdo and Dibs.
And strong to quite strong.
Well, and I did think that was a really interesting answer, even though I'm going to go ahead and predict right now that fans won't accept it. In other words, you know, if you wanted, like, if you were only kind of listening half speed there, what he basically said is, to the idea that Kyle Shanahan's not good at coming from behind, you don't get to be good at everything in the NFL. You have to pick your thing and lean into it. And the Niners have picked pre-snap motion, amazing run game, get a lead, have a good pass rush, and try to sit on you. And it doesn't mean that you can't come back or you're not allowed to come back or, you know, they just acknowledge that, oh, we fell down by 8 points, so that's the end of that. It just means it's not your bread and butter. And it's definitely not. And I don't even know how I feel about that. But again, you also can't really argue with the overall success that they've had doing that. And I don't mean it winning the Super Bowl. I just mean on a game in and game out basis.
Right, and the formula is to win the time of possession, possess the ball, have the lead, and then you go to the ground game, and if you run it 30 times or more, you usually win. And up until this year, when you win the time of possession battle, you also usually win. And I think back to the Kansas City game, and the Chiefs did exactly the blueprint that the 49ers want to do. They got the lead, they never relinquished the lead, and after Brock threw that second pick, Kansas City went about running the ball methodically down the field. They scored a touchdown. They got it back. They ran it down the field methodically. They scored another touchdown. They won the time of possession battle. They controlled the ground game. They out-Ninersed the Niners.
Yep,
and so,
yep.
And this year's been weird because they had won the time of possession every game up until then, and yet they had lost a couple of games mm-hmm. when they won the time of possession battle.
And then there's this, and I hope that if you're a 49er fan, this was your favorite part of the conversation with Kurt Warner. I also hope it doesn't make me sound like a rivalry homer. When I've been saying all week, the Cowboys stink. They stink out loud. And people are like, oh, Willard, you just want the Niners to win. Does it work better when Kurt Warner says it?
I don't think they're very good right now. I don't think there's anything that they do really well. You know, and that becomes a huge part of it, is that not every team can do everything, but if you want to compete in this league, you better be really good at something if that's the case. And Dallas isn't really good at anything.
Yeah, and that's...
That's an amazing quote, because it was the theme of the whole conversation. He's like, Niners, you have to be really good at something, and they are. Rallying from behind ain't it, but they are really good at something.
Yeah.
And the Cowboys, on the other hand, are good at nothing.
Right, and they were built to be a team that can run it effectively and then use play action to get their amazing wide receiver the ball like they did last year when he had 194 targets or something, almost 200 targets on the year. And yet this year, you look at the metrics, and when it comes to running the ball, they're dead last in yards per carry. So defenses don't really have to sell out for the run. You can stop the run with your front four, throwing a couple of linebackers, and they're not going to gash you on the ground like the Rams did, the Cardinals did, certainly the Chiefs did. So then you can devote more attention to the pass game, which is also limited because all they have is a good tight end and CeeDee Lamb and not much else.
888-957-9570. How about Dre and Lamore? Dre, thanks for waiting. What's going on, man?
I just watched on Thursday Night Football listening to you guys.
All right. Us too. We're watching and now listening to you.
Touche. Yeah, I got to agree with Kurt. Dallas ain't very good. We have Onajon Dallas. I think this is going to be their Super Bowl. They're going to play a little harder. But, you know, we really need to win bad ourselves. So, and I don't believe Purdy's been playing subpar. I believe he's been up there, you know. It's just his weapons aren't there. We've been struggling in the red zone. Going to Kittle has helped. I'm sure you guys would agree.
Yep.
And I think they need to do more of that. I have a question for you guys, though.
What is it?
Do you guys make a lot of road games?
Do we make a lot? I mean, not traditionally.
Yeah, it's tough.
I had a good year a couple years ago where I got to Soldier Field for the opener, and then I got to Vegas for the closer. So now and again, yes, but not usually.
Okay, well, I've been, watching the Niners the last few years, and let's say the Minnesota game, for instance. I could have swore I saw a lot of red in them stands. And I'm talking to Jody Mack on CBS Sports a couple months ago, and I'm telling him that the Niners represent really well on the road.
Yep.
And he's laughing at me, telling me we're not even in the top 10. He's saying Pittsburgh's number one, which I agree. Dallas is probably number two.
I don't. Dre, let me stop you right there. You already passed the Niners. They are number one. And I know Jody Mack, and he's been doing it for 1,000 years, and that's why he gave you that list, because that list is 1,000 years old. I can, and I'm not being a homer. I can give you data. The ticket companies will tell you now, and they've been doing this for a couple of years, absolutely no fan base travels like the 49ers, period. End of story. That's a fact.
Thank you. Thank you. I wish I had that recorded so I could play that for Mr. Jody Mack. He seems to think the Eagles are a great road traveling team.
And they're great, but all you have to do is go to Vivid Seats. They have the metric on the resale market and what percentage of fans come from which area and which team. And look at next time the Niners go on the road at Tampa, for example. They're going to probably have 30 to 35% of the seats, and that's across the country.
Yeah, and by the way, you know why Jody Mack thinks the Eagles travel really well?
It's Jody Mack, because he's an Eagles fan.
Because he's from Philly, exactly right. And they do, like Dre, and thank you so much, Dre.
And Pittsburgh and Dallas also,
of course.
Yeah.
Those are phenomenal fan bases and traditional teams and all of those things. But if you want to get into this in 2024, there is absolutely no debate. There is no debate at which fan base has been the biggest, the loudest, the most traveling, all of that, at least in the last handful of years. And it's the 49ers.
Yep. And the metrics will point it out, and all you have to do is tune into a game, no matter where the Niners are playing on the road, and watch what happens when Kyle Juszczyk does something. You hear the juice come up from the crowd, and it's not the home team booing a 3-yard run from the fullback.
No, and by the way, it is different in certain cities. Like, there'll always be good representation. It'll be bigger in some than others, obviously.
Buffalo is going to be an interesting
Buffalo
one.
Buffalo is
a tough nut to crack.
And so is Green Bay.
No doubt.
And I will tell you, having in that year been to both Chicago and Vegas, this will not surprise you, but one of those was a much more red crowd than the other.
Yep.
The one in Vegas was overwhelming.
Of course.
It was unbelievable.
When everybody takes over Vegas.
Yes, and it was the end of the year and the Raiders were not good and the Niners were. But Chicago was wonderfully represented, but still very decidedly Chicago.
75-25 best, I think.
No doubt. But you'll always have a good turnout of Niner fans.
Certainly. And I think about the remaining road games, and you've got, I think, Miami's on the road again this year. And
I think so.
That one's going to be a pretty good smattering of red, because the Dolphins at that point probably won't be in the thick of it. Tampa's a tough one because it's not a real destination, but if you live anywhere in the South, that's a game that you'll probably want to go to.
And Tampa, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes those are the ones to do.
Right.
Those, like, you know, go to the ones where it's not going to be like this really, really difficult ticket or whatever it is. Yeah, you're correct. It's at Miami. They still have to go to Arizona. It's at Green Bay, it's at Buffalo, it's at Tampa. Those are your remaining road games. And I will tell you, if you're a Niner fan and you are considering this, I love that you bring up Buffalo. You and I talked about this a few weeks ago, would be like, it's kind of bucket listy.
Totally.
A little bit. I've never been. I've never been, and I'd love to. But if you are a Niner fan thinking about a roadie, football at Lambeau Field is out of this world.
If I was so rich that I didn't have a job, I would fly to Green Bay and go to that game, rent an RV, putter my way to Buffalo and go to that game, and then fly home.
You will leave with 28 new friends. You will have gained 7 pounds. And you will have experienced something like you've never experienced before.
Yeah, it's definitely on the bucket list.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So good. All right. 888-957-9570. You want to wax poetic? You want to do Niners Cowboys? You want to do Kuminga? You want to do Buddy Buckets? Whatever it is fine. But also, Brock Purdy had his press conference today. A couple key things that he wanted to put out there, and we'll go over that coming up next on Willard and Dibs.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Now, back
to Willard and Dibs.
It's a great question.
Wow, that's a great question. That's a great question. That's a great question.
And that's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
It's becoming a tradition around these parts. And remember, I want to start out whenever this happens, I'm going to let everybody know. Because I know I'm a talkative blowhard know-it-all, but if we do an entire segment where Dibs doesn't talk, that's not actually a thing. It means he's not here.
Thanks.
So Dibs had to go, and he's fine. He's not like going to the ER or anything like that, although I was there till 1 o'clock last night. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, is everything okay?
It's fine with me. It was my son.
Is he okay?
Yes, he's fine. He got stitches for the first time in his life. I mean.
What happened?
Dummy. Let's just say that he has learned that when your belt is too big and you want to put a new hole in it, take it to somebody to do that for you.
Oh, no.
Yeah. 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 So, and I was so, this is parenting 101, so exhausted. Wednesdays are a long day. I teach, so exhausted, and it's like 10:45 at night, and for me, that's going to bed early, and I just limped over to his room to be like, to say goodnight. That's literally what I was doing. Goodnight, I'm going to bed, and I say that from outside the door, and he goes, Dad, you need to come in here. We have a problem, and I mean, it looked like somebody had gotten shot. It was...
Jeez.
So thank you to the fine people at Marin General for their wonderful work last night. And thank you to all of you other people who did not have emergencies at the same time.
That's nice.
Yeah, isn't that the best thing when you walk into the... I mean, talk about lemonade out of lemons. You walk into the ER and nobody's there. I'm like, that's all you can hope for, kid.
How many stitches?
Just two. Just two.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And while you're there, be sure to check out how both the Morning Roast and Steiny and Goo reacted to the season opening win over the Blazers for the Warriors last night. So that got off to a good start. But as we start to push toward Friday, things are going to move back in the direction of the 49ers with the stupid, awful, hated Cowboys coming to town. It's funny what has been the number one Niners newsmaker today. Check this out now. This is a real tree shaker. Brock Purdy at his press availability talking about how he is not allowed to audible at the line of scrimmage. Do we have it?
Oh, it's on your board. I thought you were aware. I could play it if you need me to.
No, I got it. I got it. He rarely is allowed to audible. I should adjust. Take a listen.
Usually we just have an answer built into the play. And so if we do have like an all-out blitz or something, we usually have an answer of where I should be hitting or where I should be going. And there's very rare occasions where we walk up to the line and we get a look and it's, oh, shoot, they got us. And then I'm supposed to randomly make up an audible. There's nothing like that. We usually always have an answer for pressures, all-out blitz, and things like that. So that's on me to get to the right guy.
I love that, by the way. We always have an answer. So,
you sure about that?
Well, obviously, no. It doesn't always work. But we always have whatever we're trying to do in said situation. And again, I try to look at it this way, and I know that I know how it sounds. I know. Oh, gosh, you live in the guest room at Kyle's house. But aren't you interested to know why everybody who's in the NFL thinks Kyle Shanahan is such a forward-thinking play caller? Like, does anyone even have that curiosity anymore, or do we just want to be mad when a play doesn't work? Because I think what Brock is talking about there gives us a little bit of a window into why the NFL thinks that way, because that's not normal. Not everybody has a system where you literally can get to the line of scrimmage and go, okay, we're trying to do A, but if not A, then B, if not B, then C, and if not C, then D, and we can all do that right at the line of scrimmage without having to run a fire drill. I think that's interesting.
What exactly is he talking about here? Because the example that he brought up was if we see that they're going to come on an all-out blitz, like, I know who my hot guy is. Right. I mean, you know who your hot guy is on any play. And it doesn't matter who, any play caller across the NFL. I mean, you always have a hot guy. If you got a free rusher coming at you, you know who you're throwing to.
Yeah,
always have a hot guy. So what exactly is it that isn't an audible, isn't changing the play that was called, but is more than just, I know where I'm going if I see a free rusher?
I mean, it gives you a 27-second answer. I imagine he could have given you a 2-minute and 27-second answer. I also imagine we wouldn't have known what the hell he was talking about.
Probably.
Like, if you've ever heard an NFL play get called, it's gibberish.
But, like, what is it? Is it, if we think we're getting an all-out blitz, is it, hey, Debo, cut off your route a couple of yards shorter? Like, but that's similar to an audible. You're changing the play.
I don't know. Well, no, I think it's options that are already in play based on the setup of the defense. Is the way I hear it. But I don't, I mean, who knows? But it's as opposed to, I don't like what I'm seeing, let's change the play. It's more, hey, we already know, based on the way they're setting up, we're going with option 2 or option 3 or whatever.
So is it calling multiple plays in the huddle and then going with one over the other, as opposed to calling one and then seeing what happens and then picking one out of thin air that hasn't existed yet?
Maybe, but I think that they would describe it more not calling multiple plays but multiple options within one play. I think that's, I'm guessing a little bit, but that's what it sounds like to me.
When I've heard Kyle Shanahan talk about why he thinks that's better, that is better than allowing a quarterback to audible, he has said simplify, make it easier on the quarterback so they have less to think about. That still seems like a ton to worry and think about, where you're still reading the defense and figuring out what's the best option.
For sure. It's the NFL. It's hard. I mean, it's very hard to be a quarterback. That's why they give you $60 million if you do it well. But, like, yeah, when I hear this, what's also interesting to me, though, and a lot of you listening won't know this, this has had it kind of taken on a little bit of a life of its own on the internet today, which is people are doing the whole, like, oh, they don't even let Brock audible. See, they don't let Brock audible because Brock's not up to par with the other with the big dogs, because I bet Pat can audible, can't he? And by the way, I don't know. I have no idea which quarterbacks audible and which don't. But it's taking on a life of its own. And to me, that's not because it's actually that interesting. It's because it's Brock. If somebody came to you right now and went, as it turns out, the Bengals run a system by which Joe Burrow does not audible very often at the line of scrimmage. It's all baked in as options. You would go, oh. But if the Niners do it, it's like, aha, we gotcha. You're not that good, actually. It's all baked into the Brock Purdy experience. And it doesn't matter what it is. Or at least for the time being, it's always going to sound that way. It just feels like every molehill is a mountain.
Yeah, and then this is not new for Shanahan in general. This is what he's done for all of his quarterbacks with the 49ers. And you might think maybe none of those quarterbacks are good enough to call audibles, at least not ones prior to Brock Purdy. But, I mean, you got, I throw out the best quarterback of all time, Tom Brady in here, or Patrick Mahomes, or Peyton Manning, or Drew Brees. Kyle Shanahan might think it would be best. Maybe it's simply not the easiest thing for a guy who hasn't even started two full seasons yet, and that's pretty simple to understand as well. Maybe in year five, it gets to a point where Brock Purdy has a complete 100% full understanding of everything going on that he feels comfortable to do it, and Shanahan would agree at that point potentially.
Totally, yeah. I mean, that could well be. Like, in other words, don't compare it to a Brady or a Mahomes or anything like that. Compare it to what was Brady doing when he was in his 30th game? When he was in his 30th game, did Belichick, who, by the way, is not even an offensive mind, he's a defensive guy. That's maybe another piece of this. It's more like what became Josh McDaniels in New England for a while. Like, what was their relationship and where was Tom within his NFL structure when that all went down? So I don't know. Like, that might be a fun question for Kyle sometime down the road? Like, do you always see it that way? You said he likes to say, I simplify it. I think it's easier for the QB. Was that across the board? Did you do that with Matt Ryan? I'd love to know that. What did you do with Matt Ryan? Could Matt Ryan do anything different?
And if you simplify it, do you think that that takes away potentially from opportunities? Like, is it better? You have, I would imagine, the way that Shanahan calls plays right now, a finite number of options for a given play.
Totally.
If you're not able to completely change and audible the play and go to something entirely different, you're kind of somewhat limited, I suppose, to a quarterback who might be able to change and pull something out of his back pocket. Does that cost you at all here or there on offensive plays? I don't know.
Sounds like a podcast. We got to get him on a podcast. I don't think he'd answer that very well at the podium. What are you doing in 4 minutes?
We're going to hear from Bonte and Shasky, a little bit of Cowboys hate, geared up for Niners-Cowboys.
Good.
And then you and Dibs had some good Warriors conversations to begin the Warriors season, so we'll hear from you guys as well.
I'm so excited that the Warriors are here and interesting. I think that was a very interesting start. Not the whole beating Portland by 35 part, but like you come out of game one and you've already got kind of like some feelings about Kuminga and a 12-man rotation, which I've never heard of in my entire life.
How long does that last for, you think?
Until tomorrow.
Well, there might be some injuries.
Exactly. I would bet. It sounds, if I had to bet right now, Draymond's out tomorrow night. That'd
Steph
be my
Curry
bet.
Also questionable?
And so is Melton. Yeah. But it sounded like Draymond's was the most serious. So we'll see. We'll talk it out tomorrow. All of that with Grandy is coming up, and it's brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Hey, Dibs, do you want to do it again tomorrow? All right, he did his Wiggins impersonation. For Dibs, for Grandy, for Steven, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. That's all you got.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.